random screening is stepped up for international passengers. The TSA's next boss is trying to shake some old skeletons. And thousands of flyers are delayed by a security blunder at Newark. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this Aerocast. Here's what's up in aviation for Tuesday, January 5th, 2010. The TSA issued new security directives Sunday to all domestic and international air carriers with inbound flights to the U.S., effective yesterday. Quote, "Because effective aviation security must begin beyond our borders, and as a result of extraordinary cooperation from our global aviation partners, TSA is mandating that every individual flying into the U.S. from anywhere in the world, traveling from or through nations that are state sponsors of terrorism or other countries of interest, will be required to go through enhanced screening," unquote. No list of countries was provided, but Politico reports they include Nigeria, Pakistan, Yemen, Afghanistan, Libya, and Somalia. The State Department's roster of state sponsors of terrorism is also known to include Cuba, Iran, Sudan, and Syria. All affected travelers will get full-body pat-down and physical inspection of property. There's no mention of corrective measures to address the administrative oversights that allowed a 23-year-old single male with no luggage and a one-way ticket purchased with cash to board Northwest Flight 253 on Christmas Day. TSA promises threat-based screening, but also more of the random hassling of law-abiding international passengers, which has come to be called security theater. TSA calls these long-term sustainable security measures. Unlike the tighter security imposed the week after Christmas, these have no end date. They'll last indefinitely. President Obama's nominee to head the Transportation Security Administration is coming under renewed fire for an incident back in the 80s in which he admits using his position in the FBI to snoop into personal records of his ex-wife and her boyfriend. He was censured by superiors at the time. If confirmed by the Senate, Errol Suthers would oversee an agency responsible for maintaining sensitive databases. The issue is not new, but Suthers recently changed his story. On October 22nd, he claimed in a sworn affidavit that he accessed the files himself. His previous testimony had been that he had a subordinate do it for him. Independent Senator Joe Lieberman's office has issued a statement which says the senator, quote, is satisfied that the totality of Mr. Suthers' career more than qualifies him for the position to which he is nominated, unquote. Sunday night was a really expensive evening for Continental Airlines. At the airline's terminal at Newark Liberty International Airport, a man walked into the secure area through the exit corridor, bypassing screening. The TSA can't say why it had no one there to stop him. The report of the security breach came about 5:20 p.m. TSA halted screening at that point, and all departures were canceled. Passengers already on planes were ordered back into the terminal. TSA set about reviewing surveillance footage and hours later evacuated the terminal so everyone could be rescreened. When that rescreening had not yet started by 10 p.m. and it was clear nothing would be flying out that night, Continental decided to reschedule passengers on Sunday and Monday at no charge. Up next on ANN, a helicopter lands safely after a loose engine cowl hits the rotor. Two pilots have a close call when their LSA spins. And a homeless plane thief gives Airport Watch a black eye. You're listening to Aero News.
Remember what the future used to look like? The flying cars, the spaceports, the rocket packs and spandex outfits? That was some future, wasn't it? But hey, here's the real future. A Garmin Wass Navigator. It makes its own glide path out of GPS signals, so you can land IFR at thousands of airports with no ILS or other ground-based approach aids. Now that's a future you can believe in. Garmin Wass GPS. Follow the leader.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for January 5th. I'm Paul Plack. What's that joke about a helicopter consisting of 10,000 parts flying in loose formation? Well, it was no joke for the pilot of an AS-355 conducting an air taxi flight for six passengers in Arizona last month. The NTSB's initial report says the pilot felt a thumping noise, followed by slight feedback in the cyclic. He had another pilot take a look and was told his left engine cowling was open and part of it appeared to have separated. An emergency landing was completed without injuries or further incident on a dirt road. An FAA inspector found two of the three main rotor blades damaged, one with an inch-long gouge about a quarter inch deep near the blade root. The missing portion of the left engine cowling was never found. On Monday, December 21st, in Suffolk, Virginia, a CFI was attempting to check out a low-time private pilot in a Czech Aircraft Works Sport Cruiser, a special light sport aircraft. Her male client initiated a power-off stall and reported that a sudden yaw to the left escalated quickly into a tight spin, despite the application of right rudder. According to the NTSB's preliminary report, the instructor took the controls and initiated spin recovery inputs, but the plane did not respond. Instead, she managed to pull it out only at the bottom of a dive, which used up too much of the 2,500 feet AGL they started with. The plane hit trees and terrain and came to rest inverted. The pilot being checked out suffered minor injuries. The instructors were serious. Both criticized the plane's low-speed handling. The sport cruiser was described as substantially damaged. The wreckage was recovered for a detailed examination to be conducted at a later date. Authorities in Frederick, Maryland are still trying to figure out how a 51-year-old homeless guy with no record of flight training managed to slip into a locked hangar and make off with a Super Cub. Craig Cox reportedly nose-planted the plane while taxiing, then ran to a tent near the airport where he lives. The Piper is owned by the Mid-Atlantic Soaring Association, which uses it as a tow plane. Association President Michael Higgins says nobody in the club knows Cox, and airport officials are trying to figure out how the guy gained access to the airport in the middle of the night. Frederick Municipal is also the home of the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association, which has tried to convince the TSA that its airport watch program is an adequate substitute for additional federal security regulation of general aviation. Oops. Still ahead, the FAA removes the final hurdle to a full merger of Delta and Northwest. The Sea King helicopter is retired by the U.S. Navy. And a Warbird restorer is looking for sponsors. You're listening to Aero News.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR20 GTS. Go ahead, indulge yourself. The SR20 GTS provides entry-level luxury into the world of Cirrus, yet at a price that makes indulgence affordable. When friends, family, and business associates experience the versatility, freedom, and sheer fun of flying in your Cirrus, they'll see that it maximizes the most precious commodity of all, time. To learn more, call 888-750-9922. Or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Tuesday, January 5th. I'm Paul Platt. The dawning of a new year has brought the official end of Northwest Airlines as an entity separate from Delta. On New Year's Eve, Delta got the official go-ahead from the FAA to run under a single operating certificate. The Wall Street Journal reports that while 80% of Northwest's planes were already repainted in Delta livery, the FAA approval clears the way for crews to be fully integrated, and all vestiges of Northwest are expected to be gone by spring. Delta now becomes the world's largest airline, with 750 aircraft serving 360 cities worldwide. The U.S. Navy has bid farewell to an aircraft type which has been in service longer than any of the humans who fly it. The last operational UH-3H Sea King helicopter was retired last month during a ceremony marking the end of 50 years of service for the type. Captain Andrew Masico, Patuxent River commanding officer and a former Sea King pilot and squadron commander, presided over the ceremony. Quote, "This ceremony is for all the maintainers, the support people, and crews who flew the mighty Sea King over the decades. The Sea King was a pleasure to fly and was the longest-serving operational helicopter model in Navy history," unquote. The last operational Sea King entered service in 1986 and logged over 10,000 hours, but it's not exactly being put out to pasture. The aircraft will now be used for training pilots who fly Marine One, the presidential helicopter fleet. The Marines become the last U.S. service to fly the type. Retired Navy Rear Admiral Ron Christensen, a former Sea King pilot and squadron commander, called the machine amazing. Quote, "The Sea King was a multi-mission helicopter before they invented the term. But as great as the Sea King was, it's the people who maintained it, supported it, and flew in it that really made it what it was," unquote. The Sea King fleet is estimated to have accumulated more than 5 million hours in military service since its introduction in March of 1959. And finally today, everyone in aviation seems to be looking for money after 2009. But Craig McBurney's search is a little different. He has spent 20 years and a half million dollars of his own money, accumulating 10 World War II Corsairs, the only warbird ever to be built completely within one state. That would be Connecticut, and McBurney convinced the state legislature to name the Corsair the state's official plane. Now he's looking for money to finish restoring one to airworthy condition. The plane he has in mind was built in 1945 by United Aircraft Corporation in Stratford. His restoration team has included students anxious to learn the craft and network with prospective employers. McBurney tells the Hartford Courant, quote, "We've got the expertise, now we just need an infusion of capital. We're trying to find a sponsor here in the state of Connecticut that will help us finance this over the next couple of years to allow us to stay in the state," unquote. He figures he needs $1 million. If you'd like to help, visit www.connecticutcorsair.com. That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, we'll start a three-parter on the state of the industry and the state of Cirrus Aircraft with Cirrus CEO Brent Wouters. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our Aerocasts at iPodder, Podcast Alley, or at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.